Hey everyone, it's Lacey Skulls from VH1's Rock of Love, and this is Talk of Love, the new podcast. This isn't just reality, this is real life. Hey everyone, it's Lacey motherfucking Skulls, and this is episode 19 of Talk of Love. How are you guys? What's been happening? Anything going on in the country? Any craziness or wildness? Well, this is your break, your vacation from all of that. And I want to say that by the time you guys see this episode, it will be Monday, June 8th, which means that my birthday is in 2 days, which is June 10th. I will be 44 years old. Can you believe it? So I was born in 1976, and that's a wild. It's so weird to me to think I'm going to be 44. That's like just, I don't feel 44. It's a really weird concept to me. I kind of still feel like 25, you know? But anyway, I have always been very vocal and open about my age as far back as I can remember. And I remember being in my 30s, early 30s, mind you, and people in the music industry, you know, who were like managers or executives or whatever, they'd be like, Lacey, you really shouldn't say that you're 30 or 31. You should say that you're in your 20s because people might look down upon you for that. And people like, you know, girls and women in their, you know, early 20s and stuff. So you should really like not be advertising your age. And I just remember ever since hearing that, I was just always like, fuck that. You know, that's, it's crazy to me that we have been conditioned as a society to hide that element of us, like, that's who we are. That's how many years we've been alive. And we really can't do anything about that. And it's a weird thing. I always thought it was a weird thing to shame people for. And, you know, because there is that stigma about age, my attitude has always just been, you know, fuck that. Because the way I look at it is if you're in your 40s, and let's say you're female, as am I, and if you're a badass bitch, if you think of yourself as a badass bitch, well, guess what? That just means you've just had that many more years to perfect that shit, right? You've had that many more years, decades of life experience, of education, of making good decisions, making bad mistakes, and learning from all of that. And really, you can just put it all together, plus you're confident, and really kind of hone that and fine tune all of that into making yourself shine, into getting what you want out of life, into, you know, accomplishing your goals. Because we all have goals through life, but our goals are always evolving and changing and we get new goals. And so, I mean, yeah, I'm super proud of the life experience that I have. I'm super proud of the person who I am today. And the only reason I am who I am right now is because of years and years of doing things right and fucking things up and doing things right and fucking things up. So I wouldn't have had this confidence or a lot of this, the ability to do the things I do if I was in my 20s. So, you know, no shame in being in your 20s. No shame in any age. We're all a certain age for a certain reason. Our 20s are for experimenting and figuring out who we are. Our 30s are for practicing things that we've learned. Our 40s are really for like fine tuning all of that. So, I mean, there's a purpose for every aspect of your life, every phase. It's a different chapter in your book. So, I've just always been very vocal about it and very open about it. And so I feel like the older I get, the more important it is. Because I like to lead by example. So if you guys are in your 40s and or maybe you're in your 50s and you're seeing this, I just think it's important, like, be who you are. Don't apologize for who you are. And the funny thing is, being that I'm in the public eye, I do get somewhat consistent hate, if you will, from haters online. And you guys know I really don't get bothered by that kind of stuff because it's just like stupid to me. But it's funny because people sort of are consistent with me on how they hate on me and what they say. And like, of course, the one thing that I get a lot is like, oh, Lacey's crazy, you know, which is just like a very dismissive way to explain a lot of my antics or behaviors, if you will. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely like do some outrageous shit, you know, but I consider it all to be quite methodical. There's a method to the madness. So, but even still, like if they think I'm crazy, like that's just okay, sure, think I'm crazy, that's fine. I have gotten the whole you're old thing every once in a while. I don't really get it very often, but when I do get it, it's just, it's really funny to me. Like, I actually don't find it hurtful at all because I'm like, whoever is saying this to me, they're going to be my age at some point too. So, you know, and also like my age is not anything I can help. It's a fact, you know, if someone was going to hate on me for some aspect of my personality or a decision that I made in life, like that would kind of make more sense. But that's like hating on me for my hair color or my eye color or whatever. It's just like, okay. It just tells me that people are grasping at straws. But I think ageism, as they call it, has been particularly harder for women, which is why I think that women should really be inclined to own their age, own their life experience, own their education, own their intellect. You know, we've been on this earth a certain amount of years. We've gathered a lot of information for ourselves that we can turn around and use for something positive. So, like, own that. Don't hide from that. You know, you should never be shamed for who you are, how old you are, what you look like, what nationality you are. I mean, that's just so dumb and ridiculous. And so, like, don't even give that attention. Be unapologetically you. That's what I say. And that's what I've lived by. And I'm happy, you know, it works for me. And that's why when people talk shit about me online or whatever, I'm just like, okay, glad you're thinking about me. So that is that. So to move on, I have some exciting news about the podcast itself. I'm super excited for two reasons. One, Talk of Love is officially an LLC. So I've been going through the process of getting Talk of Love officially a business and getting the whole limited liability, all that stuff. So yeah, Talk of Love LLC, it's official. I'm super stoked. Moving on up in the world. And the second thing I'm really excited about is that I got my first sponsor. I'm so excited. So you guys may see here, I have all of these bottles, Liquid Death. So perfect. It's just so perfect for me. I'm super excited. I can't wait to tell you guys about this. So, okay, Liquid Death is, it's a water company. And it literally, it looks like it's alcohol or like an energy drink or something like that. But literally, it is just water. It's really good water, though. And it's they have still and they have sparkling. This is still water. So let me tell you about this company and why I'm super excited that they are sponsoring me. Because I really, you know, have been working towards getting some corporate sponsors for the podcast. But I really also wanted to get one that I was like legitimately behind, you know, like I didn't want to, you know, be like, oh, Bob's Lawnmowers. You know, I couldn't tell anything about mowing lawns. So I wanted it to be a product that I was like super all about. So here's what's cool about Liquid Death, besides their awesome whole rocker image. And if you go to their website, liquiddeath.com, it's hilarious the way they promote themselves. They're like, murder your thirst. Like their whole website's full of like that kind of stuff. It's great. So here's what's awesome about them. Okay. So, well, first of all, let me start out by saying a lot of people have asked me how I stay looking young. Thank you so much to all of you who give me that compliment. I really appreciate it. But seriously, I attribute two things for why I stay young looking. One, I get enough sleep every night. I'm very like religious about that. Two, I'm also very religious about how much water I drink. I literally drink a gallon of water a day, and I have been doing that my whole life. And it just gets all the toxins out of your body, keeps your skin, you know, moist and takes just, it's important, you guys. I don't need to explain to you why water is important. So what's great about Liquid Death is I drink tons of water anyway, but it is not, if you'll notice, it's not in a plastic bottle, it's in an aluminum can. So it actually doesn't do anything bad to the flavor. The flavor is actually really, really good. And here's what's cool. If you go to the Liquid Death website, they have a whole page that's hashtag death to plastic. And you guys know I'm an animal rights activist. And as being an animal rights activist, I'm also pro the environment, as we all should be. So here's some facts about aluminum versus plastic. Aluminum, the average aluminum can contains 70% recycled material. Bottles usually only contain about 3% of recycled material. Also, aluminum is infinitely recyclable and plastic is not. Unfortunately, a lot of recycling companies are just not able to make a profit on recycling. So a lot of times, if you try to be good and recycle your plastic bottles, a lot of times they end up in landfills anyway. And what's also bad about that is the plastics in the oceans is such a problem, you guys. It is so bad. So plastic breaks down into something called microplastics. So I wrote this down so I don't mess this up. Microplastics are very small pieces of plastic that pollute the environment. They are not any specific kind of plastic, but rather any type of plastic fragment that is less than 5 millimeters in length. So the problem with that, when plastic gets that small, less than 5 millimeters, and all in the ocean, then fish eat it and, you know, all the marine animals eat it and it's a contaminant. And then also, if you eat fish, you're eating plastic now because, you know, that's what is going into the fish bodies. So that is, you know, we got to get rid of plastic as much as we can. I know we're like really dependent on it in our society, but as much as you can avoid plastic, that is ideal, which is why liquid death in aluminum. One other crazy fact I wanted to tell you guys. It says if plastic production isn't curbed, plastic pollution will outweigh fish pound for pound by the year 2050. That is nuts, which was noted in a report from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation in partnership with the World Economic Forum. So that's the source on that fact. The other thing about liquid death is 5 cents per every can goes to nonprofit groups that help keep plastic out of the environment. So if you guys support me and if you support the environment and if you drink water, then you can continue supporting me by going to this company, liquiddeath.com, and you can get 10% off when you purchase this if you use the promo code TALKOFLOVE. So go to liquiddeath.com, promo code TALKOFLOVE, and that way you'll be supporting the company, you'll be supporting me, and you'll be supporting the environment. So it's like a win-win-win, right? So trifecta win. So anyway, that's that. Super stoked about this, and it's really good, you guys. Very refreshing. Okay, so today we're doing something a little bit different than our normal way of doing the podcast. On this episode, I wanted to give you guys, the fans, an opportunity to be included. And you guys have just been so, so great, so good to me, so supportive, especially the Talk of Love contributors, but just all of you who have been viewing and commenting and, you know, all of your positive feedback. I've been so appreciative. So I wanted to give you guys a chance to be included. A lot of you have been, still have a lot of questions for me, which I don't usually get to answer because I'm usually the one doing the interviews. So I'm here today to answer your questions. A lot of you have sent me videos of yourself asking me the questions. And so we're going to play those and get into that. We are not having a guest today because of all of the protests and because of the riots as well. It's been a very, very stressful week for a lot of people. In particular, some of the people I've been talking to be guests on the upcoming episodes, just super stressed. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to add to anybody's stress. So let's just take a week off from interviews, let everybody, you know, take a breather, and we'll get back into that next week. So today, it's all about you guys, the fans. So I do have one question I want to answer. This person didn't send in a video, but they did ask this on Instagram. I just thought it was a really great question, so I want to get into this. So on Instagram, if you haven't been to my Instagram, by the way, come find me. Talk of Love Podcast is how you can find me, or me personally at Lacey Skulls Official. So because I'm basic on Instagram, you guys have the best handle names, asks, did you play the villain character when the cameras weren't rolling? Like, did you act the same way towards the girls when you weren't being filmed? That's a really, really good question. Okay, so as I've mentioned to you guys before, you guys know this, kind of developed this villain character on the show, and it was challenging because most of the girls didn't really get to know the true me. And I did make friends with some of them, obviously, Brandy C and others. So as for the girls that I didn't bring in as friends, like for instance, on Rock of Love season one, the house pretty much divided into two. There was like the crazy wild party girls, which was like me, Brandy C, Christia, Heather, There was like six or seven of us, and some of Tamara. Am I saying her name right? Damn it. Okay, so then there was the other girls, which I lovingly refer to as the stick up their ass girls, and that was like Magdalena and Mia and Jess and Dallas and that group. So most of the time we stayed on opposite ends of the house, and we were only really together when there was like challenges or things of that nature. So there pretty much wasn't a time when the cameras weren't there. They were pretty much there all the time. And if the cameras weren't there, then we had a microphone on us, so the audio was being recorded. So I was always kind of in villain character mode with the girls that I didn't get along with. Now, Charm School was a little bit different. On Charm School, you know, I gotta say, as much fun as it was to play the villain character, there is a little element of like, it's a lot of work at the same time. It's a bit exhausting to kind of keep that drama up. And there was a few girls in Charm School over the course of Charm School that I ended up becoming friends with, like legitimately, like Brandy M, Christy Joe, Destiny, people like that. And it was funny because there were times during Charm School specifically that I tried to maintain the villain character. But what ended up happening is I was getting comfortable with the girls. So I was kind of falling in and out of character. And then, like Christy Joe is a perfect example. I remember one time I was with her, and she's always been cool. I have nothing but good things to say about Christy Joe. But there was one time where, you know, she and I were just like chit chatting and shooting the shit, and we were starting to bond a little bit. And then the cameras came in at one point, and I started challenging the girls again. And I can't remember what the context was. I just remember we were all sitting around a long table, and this was in Charm School, and Christy Joe and Destiny were there, a couple of the others, and I said something along the lines of like, I'll take you all on, and I basically like challenged them, like, I don't care if there's one of me and 10 of y'all, I'll take you all on. And I remember Christy Joe looked at me like, what just happened to Lacey? What just happened to her? And it was challenging. It was hard for me, because especially when I got to like the girls, I had to maintain the villain character. And you know, and I think that by the time Charm School came around, the girls were starting to understand that I was sort of playing to the cameras, but it still was definitely confusing to them. Like, they couldn't really fully understand why I was, you know, friendly to them sometimes and really just challenged them point blank other times, you know? So I remember Brandy M one time during Charm School. She was in another bedroom. I was in the bedroom with Megan, and Brandy M came in and she was like, "Hey, Lacey, I know you have some powder. Do you mind if I borrow some?" And there was no cameras around. So from that perspective, I'm like, there's really no reason to be shitty to Brandy M. She's asking to borrow some powder. So I remember Megan was immediately like, "No, get out. No, no, you can't have any. Get out." And so Brandy M just like stops and she's like, "Lacey, can I borrow some powder, please?" And I was like, "Sure, no problem." So I loaned it to her. But yeah, it was a balancing act for me, because there were girls I legitimately liked and I wanted to be friendly with them. But at the same time, I had to maintain this character. So I hope that answers the question. So yeah, and this is also part of the reason why I'm happy that I have this podcast, because it gives me the chance to reach out to the girls and get to know them in a way that I've never really gotten to know them before. And, you know, so far all the girls and Dave, 12-pack too, just, and Big John, so I can't just say the girls, all the castmates have been awesome. So it's been cool for me to finally get to see these people for who they truly are and see how awesome they all are. So, all right. So now we are going to move on to the fan videos, and I'm excited about these. So here we go.
Hi, Lacey. First, I want to say that I love you, and I've been watching the show since I was literally like 10 years old. And I'm 24 now, so I'm thriving off this podcast and the nostalgic feelings that it brings. My question is, can you just go a little more into detail about what filming was actually like? Like, how did you guys interact with the producers? Like, how often was Brett actually in the house? Did he sleep in the house? Did the producers like come tell you guys like, okay, this at this time we're gonna do the activities, at this time we're gonna do the eliminations? Did they tell you guys like where to stand when you're doing the eliminations, like up on the platform? I've just always wondered how that kind of stuff worked. But yeah, I love you. Thank you.
Oh, right. That was Delani. Delani, that was awesome. And by the way, girl, I love your red lipstick. I'm all about the red lipstick. So that's so cute. And oh, I love you too. That was such a sweet message. Glad you're enjoying the podcast and you asked some really, really good questions. So there's a lot to unpack here. Okay. So you're asking, how did we all interact with the producers? You know, the producers were really funny because they were sort of like little ghosts that were always on set, and you really never knew when they were going to pop out and when they weren't. So for the most part, the producers were not around. They didn't want to interfere. They tried not to interfere as much as possible. And also, they couldn't be in the shot, so they wouldn't really make any sense to interrupt something that was happening because they would just have to edit out the producer and that would screw up the whole shot. So generally speaking, the producers were really nowhere to be found. So we did have a phone in the house that was called the Bat Phone. Why they called it the Bat Phone, I have no idea. But the purpose of the Bat Phone is if we girls needed something from the producers, you know, maybe like, you know, we cut ourselves and we need some Band-Aids or if we just, whatever it is, we would go to the Bat Phone, which was usually in the kitchen, pick it up and it would ring the producers. The producers, I don't know exactly where they stayed, but I knew there's always, whether it's Rock of Love or Charm School, there's always a hidden room, which is where they all stay. And there's cameras everywhere, as you guys know. So they're watching us through the cameras. Occasionally, if they are trying to make a storyline go a specific way, they would make themselves known. And so the example I can give you of that is on Rock of Love season one, on the parents episode. I've talked about this before when Heather was on the podcast, but in case you guys missed it, I'll just kind of fill you guys in. Since it was down to the final four, it was me, Jess, Heather, and Brandy M. The producers really, really wanted me and Heather to fight because I guess they figured it would be like Clash of the Titans or something. So a few times the producers would just kind of show up out of nowhere. Like when, let's say the cameras were focused on the other girls and I was just like, you know, brushing my hair or whatever. Maybe a producer would sneak in. And they kept hinting at like, you know, you should try to get Heather out of here and stuff like that. And at the time, Heather and I were friends. I really didn't have a specific reason to turn on her. Because if you guys remember, with the other girls that I was against, I did have justifiable reasons for going against them. Like, for instance, Dallas, obviously, you guys know with the whole animal thing. And Jess and her whole crew, I just thought were like super snobby to me. So I had reasons. But with Heather, I didn't really have a reason at that point to go against her. So the producers kept coming to me just randomly at random intervals. And this is the most they had ever done this on the whole taping of the show, by the way. Before that moment, I had never really saw them. They never really made themselves present or known. So this is when they really started kind of encouraging the storyline to go a certain way. And that was, they wanted me and Heather to fight. So I kept going like, you know, it's, you know, what I was just kind of brushing them off. Then when all of us were at the table eating dinner, it was me and my parents, my dad and his wife, Heather and her parents and a few others. I remember seeing one of the producers was hiding behind an open door. We were like in the living room area, dining room area. She was in the kitchen. I just kept seeing her like sneak her little head out and she was just kind of going like this and she was just out of the shot of the camera. So I got up, I went to the kitchen and she's like, you know, Lacey, I really think that you should confront Heather because Heather is, you know, trying to make you look bad in front of your dad and this and that. And she was just like feeding me all this stuff. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I just wasn't in that mode. And I was just kind of brushed it off. And so it was later when I was talking to Brett, when he was working out outside, the producers, unbeknownst to me, were doing the same thing to Heather. And they went and told her I was talking shit about her to Brett. And then she came out and then they got their big explosive fight that they were trying to make happen. So that is an example of ways that producers would manipulate the situation. I was hoping I could like stand solid with Heather and not let the producers do that to us. But I mean, at the end of the day, it did make really great television. So I can't argue with that. So yeah, they would definitely try to like coax things a certain way. You know, they didn't tell us point blank, say this or do that, but they strongly encouraged certain things for sure. But yeah, otherwise, we didn't really see the producers unless we were doing the commentary, you know, which there was two kinds of commentary that you guys saw. There was like the one where we were in a small room where they would show us periodically giving our take on certain situations. And then there was also something separate from that called On the Flies. On the Flies were usually what you would see us do. We might be like outside or on location of wherever we were for that challenge or whatever. And that would be when the producers would just kind of grab us, like, hey, Lacey, come over here. I want you to do an On the Fly real quick. And, you know, and so she'd pull me aside or he'd pull me aside and I'd just do like a quick like 5 minutes of like what I was thinking or feeling about that situation. But as far as the one where we were in the smaller room giving commentary, that was supposed to happen maybe like once a week or so. What ended up happening is the producers got way behind. And so we ended up doing most of that actually at the end of the show, which was difficult because so much had been happening that I have forgotten a lot. And so they kind of have to like refresh your memory. And what's also weird about that whole thing, if you guys pay attention next time you see it, notice that we all speak in present tense. And that took some getting used to because, you know, normally when you tell a situation, you tell it in past tense. And, but with this, they wanted it to be like, you're telling the audience your thoughts as you're having them. So instead of saying like, oh my God, Dallas really pissed me off when she said that she was going to slit an animal's throat. Like, I am so, like, she really made me really angry or whatever. So the way I just worded that was in past tense. But so what they would want me to say is go, Dallas is telling me that if there's an animal here, she'd slit his throat. I want to kill her right now or whatever. So you have to make it like in the present tense. So I always thought that was weird to do and took some getting used to. And of course, when you're in the commentary, you can't answer in incomplete sentences. So you can't just go like, yeah, I totally agree with whatever the producer says. You have to go like, you know, Dallas really made me angry and I agree with, you know, whatever. It's you have to be like cognizant and aware of how you're wording all the sentences in addition to expressing how you feel about the situation. So that definitely took some getting used to. So, and then one other thing I was going to tell you about the producers, like making themselves known. What was interesting is in Charm School, the scene where we were all dressed up, the episode where we were all dressed up like, you know, they had the special effects makeup people come and have us dress ugly or fat or whatever the case was. So that whole craziness when we were all in the room and Heather and I were going at it and then Brandy C ended up spitting on Destiny. You guys remember that on Charm School. So what's interesting is that I've never seen this before on any of the previous shows. That got so heated and so crazy that one of the producers actually came into the room, even though it was like in the middle of the shot, and she sort of broke it up because that got so intense that they being the producers, were afraid that like fists were going to start flying. And I remember I was like literally right in the middle of yelling at Heather, I think, and Heather was in her bed, and I was just very, very heated, and it was very intense. And in the middle of it, I just hear this voice, literally just right in my ear, just behind me. And one of the producers, her name is Kathy, and she was going, "Lacey, Lacey, it's Kathy, Lacey, it's Kathy, Lacey, it's Kathy." So I'm just like going out like, "Heather, are you da 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 da," and right behind me, like, "Lacey, it's Kathy." And so it kind of like snapped me out of it, and so I turned around and the producer is like literally standing right behind me, which was highly unusual. So she told me later, she was like, I was afraid that, you know, it was going to go to blows. And if that had happened, we have to send girls home. And I just was trying to avoid that. And I'm like, well, listen, me personally, I will never hit a bitch. I will fuck her up all kinds of mentally and all kinds of psychologically. But I do not go to blows. That's not my style. I feel like I don't even need to do that because my mouth does all my dirty work for me. I don't need to use my fists. So that's not my thing. But in the moment, I think it was so intense that the producer was like, oh my God, these girls are going to start punching each other. So she sort of like broke that up. And then that's when I ended up going back into my bedroom. And then shortly after that, that's when Heather got up and followed me. And then it's the whole A-list celebrity thing. And that was that. So that's pretty wild stuff. But yeah, normally we didn't ever see the producers. we did obviously see the cameramen a lot. And that was really funny because the one thing we were told not to do, we were told not to obviously not look directly into the camera. That's called breaking the fourth wall. And if you're used to watching a show where people are not looking at the camera and then suddenly someone looks at the camera, that's just weird and it takes you out of what's going on. So we were instructed not to look at the cameras ever and not to talk to the camera operators. So, but the funny thing about that is also it was kind of easy to not talk to the camera operators because they have this giant camera covering up their faces. I mean, they're literally carrying them on their shoulders. So you're not really seeing them and you sort of get used to their presence, although it did take some getting used to because they're also always like within, 5 to 10 feet of you, which is weird, but you get used to it. But what's funny is sometimes the girls would either be doing something or saying something that was like legitimately funny. It was just like, we were cracking up. And I would look over and I'd see the cameraman laughing. But then they couldn't laugh too hard because then they would be heard. And then people would be like, where did that voice come from? So they'd have to be like stifling their laughter. And that was really funny. And sometimes if we happen to notice them laughing at whatever it is that we're doing, we'd sort of like, point at them and point it out. And then we would like keep going and see how much we could make the cameraman laugh and like just to watch them squirm to try not to laugh. It was like the more that we pointed out, like, ah, you're about to bust out and crack up. And it was just, the more it would make them laugh. It was really fun and funny. So, but on the opposite end of that spectrum, I mean, these were long hours, you guys. It was 24 hours a day pretty much that we were being filmed. I think that they didn't film us for about 4 hours while we slept, but it was intense. So what was funny is sometimes, the stick up their ass girls in particular loved to lay out by the pool. And, my little brain was always like, we're here to make a show. I was always aware of that, which explains a lot of my behavior. I was always aware we're making a TV show. And I knew that by these girls laying out, nobody wants to watch that. That's fucking boring. So the thing that sucked for the people that were the camera operators is they had to film that shit no matter what. So there'd usually be like a couple of cameramen, camerawomen filming, the girls that were like the A-team girls, the party girls, because we were oftentimes separated. Then there was the cameraman filming the stick-up-their-ass girls laying out. But they couldn't not film them because from their perspective and from the producer's perspective, if they went like, these girls are just laying out, we're not getting anything good from this, let's just like leave them alone, that might be the moment where one girl says something to another girl that's like really important to the story. Like, hey, we should go, throw chicken at Lacey when she's in the shower or whatever. They can't risk missing that kind of drama. Or if, let's say two of those girls by the pool start getting into it with each other, they can't miss that. So they have to sit and film them, even if they're just like not talking and laying out for hours and hours. And there was a couple of times where I walked past cameramen and they were literally like this. They're like, resting their chins and like barely have their eyes open. You can just see they're like, their heads are starting to list off to the side. And I always felt so sorry for them because they just had to sit there and film boringness. And literally, I've watched them like trying to keep themselves awake. So Delaney's other question is, how often was Brett in the house? Did he sleep in the house? To my knowledge, Brett was not in the house that often, and I'm pretty sure he did not sleep in the house either. There was definitely late nights and late party nights and stuff like that, but we just didn't see him often, and if he was there, we knew it. If he was there, he was interacting with us girls. And one thing I will say that was kind of cool that he did, even though I didn't like him on a romantic level, there was a couple of times early on when, we were all really scrambling to try to get to know him and let him get to know us, which was hard because there's so many of us and, only one of him. So anytime he gave us one-on-one attention, it was really cool. And as I said, I didn't like him romantically, but I got to be honest, you guys, I was definitely starstruck by him 100%. I mean, when I was growing up, the 80s was really like my era where I first started getting into music. I was a really big fan of Poison. I always thought Bret Michaels was a really good looking guy. And now here he is, like we're interacting with him on an almost daily basis. And he's really nice and he's very charming and he's sweet and he's fun and he's a very likable person. And I definitely had that element of like, he didn't feel like a peer to me. He didn't feel like a castmate to me. He felt like a rock star, like what he is, you know? So especially like the first week that I was there, there was times where, you know, I would be in the bedroom with my girls at the time, you know, Brandy C, and Christia, Heather, all them. And we'd be sleeping and all of a sudden we would just hear this like acoustic guitar and Bret would literally walk in and wake us up by playing the acoustic guitar. And it was like, this is so cool. It was like, it's a pretty cool way to wake up. It was awesome. But no, unless it was literally challenges or dates or the stuff that you guys saw, you know, with conversations at the house with us and Bret, we really didn't see him outside of that. So I'm pretty sure he didn't sleep there or stay there. Okay, and then Delana, you also asked if the producers told us to do certain things but told us when certain things were going to happen. Here's the schedule. Here's the agenda. Actually, no, we were really, really kept in the dark. And that was frustrating because, you know, a lot of times we didn't even know what we were supposed to wear. What kind of shoes are we supposed to wear today? Are we like going outside somewhere? Should I wear my sneakers? Should I wear, you know, my high heels? They would kind of tell us like at the last minute. I don't know if, I don't want to say the producers were disorganized because that's not fair to say because clearly they're organized because they orchestrated this whole entire show and it came off like awesome. But sometimes I do feel like they kind of were a little scrambly over certain things and didn't really have the agenda down solid. So we were really left in the dark. A lot of times we didn't know what the challenge was going to be. We didn't know what to expect, which is hard for me because I always like to be prepared for things that are going to be going on, either like mentally or otherwise. And they just didn't allow us to do that. Everything was a surprise. We never knew what was going on. Anything that you saw where we were reacting in surprise was legitimate because we never knew what the hell was going on. So that was tough. And then during the eliminations, yeah, they definitely told us where to stand. And the eliminations took hours. And it was always the end of the night. It was always like under hot lights and it took hours and we were standing. We're not allowed to sit. They often got irritated with us if we had to go pee. It took hours just to get set up for that. And every, you know, they had to get us standing like in the distance between each other, that it was the right distance. So it was even when you guys see it on TV, the lighting had to be just so, the audio had to be just right. So it was a lot of setup for those damn eliminations. And on top of that, we're worn out, but we're sick of standing under hot lights, but we're also like nervous, you know, because nobody wants to go home and we know that's coming up. So eliminations were not fun. They were definitely like the least fun of the whole entire thing. So stressful and exhausting. So, okay. So that was a great first set of questions. Thank you, Delani. All right. So next we have Sean from Australia is asking questions about I Love Money 3. So let's hear from Sean.
My name is Sean. I'm from the Gold Coast in Australia. Huge fan of you, your podcast, and the Of Love franchise. Thank you so much for keeping the podcast alive despite all the drama. It's what I look forward to every week, and it's honestly never been better. It is so fucking good. Can I swear? Anyway, I'm a huge fan of Delicious from season 2 of Flavor of Love, and I know that she was on I Love Money 3 with you. And the rumors over the years have been that she was eliminated early because she hit Kashmir. Can you confirm or deny this? And if it's true, can you explain what happened to the best of your memory? Delish, Bucky, and yourself, I was rooting for all three of you. I think you're fierce women, phenomenal then and now. And so I'd be interested to hear what happened there. Thank you.
So that was Sean from Australia. Oh, Sean, you're so nice. I appreciate all of your kind words, and I'm glad you're enjoying the podcast. So really great questions about I Love Money 3, which you guys know is the season of I Love Money that I was on that was canceled because of the tragic way that everything ended with Ryan Jenkins. So Okay, so I have talked about this a little bit before, but I'll go into a bit more detail. When I did I Love Money 3, I immediately bonded with Bucky, who, well, Shay is her real name, but Bucky on Flavor of Love, and Delicious. And those two women are just amazing women. They are just so strong and so confident and sweet and funny and fun. Like, I can't say enough good things about Shay slash Bucky and Delicious. So what's funny is when I first showed up on, even actually it was before being on set, we were at our hotels in Mexico. And, you know, we were told to stay in our rooms, but of course, by then, you know, it was like the third show I had done for the production company. So I was sort of like a little bit more relaxed about, you know, following the rules exactly. I'm like, if I break the rules, they're not going to send me home. So fuck it. I'm going to go wander around and see who's here. So it was before we showed up at the house to film. We were still in the hotel room, and I did run into Shay. And what was interesting is the first thing she did was she sees me, she runs right up to me, and she sort of like, you know, puts her elbow, her arm, like, and we're going like arm in arm, right? And she's like, hey girl, I just want to let you know that like I got your back and like I'm with you and let's, you know, totally kick ass together and, you know, take care of each other and look out for each other and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, holy shit, this is amazing. Cause I was always a big fan of hers on Flavor of Love. And she literally came up to me first, and I remember I didn't immediately recognize her because her hair was different, and it's just also weird seeing somebody like in person versus when you're used to seeing them on TV. But the second I realized it was her, I was like, "Holy shit, Bucky! Like you're so awesome!" And I was super stoked because when I was first getting there to Mexico, you know, I was pretty familiar with I Love Money and how the game was played, and I knew it was important to win challenges and stuff like that, but I also obviously understand there's a huge social element of it. So I got to be honest, you guys, I was nervous because I was like, everybody knows I'm a villain. They all saw how I was on Rock of Love and on Charm School. If they have the power and the opportunity to send me home, of course, they're going to send my ass home. I mean, if I was them, I would send me home. You know, I wouldn't want to deal with all my shenanigans. So I was like, I'm going to have to get really fucking creative here on how to not be voted off first. Because I really honestly thought that was going to happen. And I also knew that I couldn't just be nice to people because they would probably say that I was being manipulative or they wouldn't believe it. They would think that I was just being nice so I could stay and not be sent home. And then I'd probably do some like backstabby shit. So that was what I was thinking. So I'm like, I got to figure this out, how to get around all of this. So as you guys know, you know, there's the green team, there's the gold team. So I was on the green team, and Delicious and Shay and several others were on the gold team. So, and as you also know, the rules of the game are that we have challenges. Whichever team loses the challenge, they have to send three of their own members onto the chopping block. And then the one person from the winning team gets to decide who of the three of the losing team gets to go home. So I was really kind of focusing on that aspect of it. And at first, you know, I had strong guys on my team, the green team. I had Weasel from Daisy of Love, and I had Big Rig and a couple of other like kind of big, powerful guys. So I was like, you know, we probably stand a chance of winning these challenges. But the idea came to me when we were getting ready to go. I went to the gold team. I said, hey, can I make a deal with you guys? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, you guys don't want to lose, right? And they're like, of course not. I'm like, you don't want to be, you know, have three of your own be on the chopping block to potentially go home. And they're like, right, where are you going with this? And I was like, what if I can guarantee you that you will never lose and you'll never be on the chopping block? You won't have to risk being sent home. What if I can guarantee you that? Will you keep me safe and make sure that I never go home? And they're like, okay, where are you going with this? And I promised them that I would throw every challenge and make sure that we lose if when my own team puts me on the chopping block and the gold team gets to decide who of the green team can go home. If I throw all the challenges, they have to promise me that they'll never send me home. And it was such a great symbiotic relationship. It worked out so well. And I got to say, I was really proud of myself for coming up with that game plan because it completely fucking worked. And it was great too because it gave the whole like drama element that is always really fun on these shows. I mean, my own team like hated my guts because I was making it so that we were losing every challenge. So it was awesome. I was really proud of myself for coming up with that strategy. And then, of course, by doing that, I was able to bond with the people in the gold team because from their perspective, I was totally like saving their asses and make it so they never had to risk going home. So I really bonded with Delicious and Shay. And they're both really strong, powerful women. Now, the moment where Delicious allegedly struck Kashmir, unfortunately, I wasn't there for that. I don't know where I was, but I wasn't there. And I'm not exactly sure what went down. I don't know if Delicious like hit her very hard or just like smacked her. I don't know what happened. But the production company has pretty strong rules against hitting people. Like, we can't do that. We'll get sent home. So all I know is that there was like, by the time I realized something was going on, there was like a little bit of chaos. And I was like, where's Delicious? And then Shay and some of the others told me that she had hit Kashmir and was being sent home. And unfortunately, they pretty much like yanked her right then and there. I didn't even get a chance to say goodbye to her. She wrote me like a cute little like note, you know, upon leaving. So she got to say goodbye to me that way. I didn't get to say goodbye to her. It really was a bummer because she was so much fun. And I really liked having her as part of the cast. I don't know what exactly happened, but I just know a lot of us were super, super, super upset because we all loved Delicious. But I will say about Delicious, she does not take any shit at all. She doesn't take any shit. So, you know, it's sort of makes sense to me. You know, Kashmir and Cocktail, we couldn't really get them on board our alliance. They kind of had a thing going with Ryan and they didn't trust me or any of the other people I was aligned with. So I couldn't really get to Kashmir or Cocktail on a psychological level. In fact, at one point I was trying to get a whole all girls alliance going so that we could send Ryan home. I couldn't get them on board that either. So there's a lot of frustration there, which I think is why, you know, Delicious probably snapped because we just couldn't get Kashmir or who's the other person I just said? I couldn't get anybody from that Cocktail. Sorry. I couldn't get anybody from that team, that alliance, to get on board with us. And you know, and it sucked because they kind of backed Ryan the whole entire way. He ended up winning the whole damn show. And I was actually in alliance with Ryan too, up until a certain point. About halfway through, I started realizing I can't be aligned with this guy anymore because he is winning all of the challenges. He is going to win the whole show. So at that point, I'm like, we need numbers now. We need you, Cocktail. We need you, Kashmir. And we just couldn't get them on board. They were just in Ryan's pocket. So unfortunately, I didn't see it. You know, I'm sure whatever Delicious was feeling in the moment, I'm sure she probably was in the right as far as not how she acted, but how she was thinking about the whole thing. I totally get the frustration. So anyway, so that's that. And God, I could probably talk more about I Love Money. I am going to bring some of the other castmates on at some point down the road, you guys, probably soon. So don't worry, because I know there's so much more about I Love Money to be had and to be talked about. I don't really want to go on and on by myself because I feel like I need another person's memory. It's hard to remember that far back, all the little details. So I would rather get into that with you guys with another person that can help me remember some of these details or maybe saw some things that I didn't see. So, all right. The next question is from my good buddy, Mike P. Official, who is also a very loyal Talk of Love contributor. Let's hear from Mike.
Hey, Lacey. So quick question. How long after filming the episodes did the reunion happen?
All right, good question. So Rock of Love season one was filmed in 2007, as you guys know. And we actually filmed in March. We filmed in all of March. Those of us who lasted to the end were there for about 4 weeks. Then they spent April, May, June editing, and then the show aired July, August, September. So just as it was airing and the very last episode that happened, we actually filmed the reunion show right after the last episode aired. So we filmed the reunion show in September, and it was good because it gave the girls, the castmates, the opportunity to get to watch everything that happened from the TV the same way that you guys did, which gave us a lot more insight because we were able to see things that happened that we weren't actually able to witness with our own eyes, you know? So, and then of course you have like that many months to really analyze everything and think about how you feel about certain things. So that's why a lot of the times when the reunion shows happened, it was, everything was so heated because you had all those months to just sit and like fester on whatever was bothering you. Or if you just really had something that you needed to let the world know or let a castmate know or let Brett know, you just had months and months to just like kind of sit on that. And so that's why everybody kind of went nuts at these reunion shows. So yeah, we filmed those immediately after the last episode aired on TV. And then I think the reunion show then was aired to you guys maybe just a few couple weeks after we filmed it. So yeah, good question, Mike. All right. We got time for one more. I like this question because I love music, and this is a great music question from my boy Gage.
Hi, Lacey. My question for you is, if you could put together a dream tour, five bands, dead or alive, doesn't matter who they are, who would they be and why?
That is a great, great question and a really hard question as well. You know, for me, there's so many different types of music that I like, different genres. So I'm going to cheat on this answer a little bit and I'm going to give three tour scenarios by genre because I can't just answer with just one genre because I like so many different ones. So I've talked about these bands quite a bit throughout this podcast. I am all about like the goth industrial bands. And so if I was going to do a goth industrial band tour, I would choose Nine Inch Nails, of course. They're like my all-time favorite. The Cure is also one of my all-time favorite bands. Marilyn Manson, I'm a big fan of. Depeche Mode and Susie and the Banshees. That would be a badass tour. I would totally go see that tour. So now I also am a huge, huge fan of all of the 90s rock music. So I would have to say Nirvana is another one of my all-time favorites. Jane's Addiction, Alice in Chains, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Rage Against the Machine. That would be an awesome tour. And then lastly, I can't forget my hip-hop because I love hip-hop. But again, this is going to age me a little bit because I'm all about like 90s music. So if I were to do a five-band hip-hop tour or five artists, I would have to do Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, NWA. Oh my God, that'd be amazing. Ice-T/Body Count and I gotta say Eminem. I love Eminem. So that would be my my goth industrial tour, my hip hop tour, and my 90s rock tour. So good question. I love it. Okay, well, I think that is all the time that we have for today. And that was really a lot of fun. If you guys want to do more of this, please send me your fan question videos to Instagram. If you can send them, either DM me or tag me, just go to Talk of Love Podcast on Instagram, and that's where you can send me your videos, because I probably will be doing these, not necessarily for the full episodes in the future, but you know, we'll do segments. And I really just love you guys. I love interacting with you. And I'm all about hearing from you guys and answering your questions and talking with you. Speaking of that, I do want to take a second here to give a shout out. So I've been talking a lot about the Talk of Love contributors, and basically these are people who are enjoying the podcast. They want to show their support. And so they go to the talkoflove.net website, click contribute, and they have signed up for rewards like Skype chats and personalized video shout outs and all kinds of other stuff that I have on there that's pretty cool and fun, and it makes it so that I get to know you guys. Especially the Skype chats have been really, really fun. So I have to give a shout out to some of the contributors who've been particularly supportive. Mike Paquette, you are awesome. Very Malcolm over in Scotland. Pete over in England, Joe in Germany, which is super cool that this podcast is going international. Zena, you know how much I love you, girl. You're such a badass and always so encouraging. Evilness, you're my favorite rocker. And we've got Crystal Mork, we've got Jen Grogan, Rob Yager, Laura Ann Brooke, Josh Murray, Alana, Ryan, Raquel, Colton, Lola, Andrea. You guys, I gotta just say thank you so much for how awesome you've been to me, how supportive you've been. Thank you for being a Talk of Love contributor. If you want to be a contributor, as I said, go to talkoflove.net and click contribute, sign up for some fun rewards with me. Oh, and also the Rock of Love reaction videos. I've been sending those out to the contributors every week, and those have been a lot of fun. So sign up if you want that. And also, I got to give a shout out to one of my favorite nonprofits, which is Beagle Freedom Project. Go check them out. Go support them. They are great. They've been around for many, many years. They go and get dogs out of research laboratories that have been tested on. They rescue them and they get them into loving forever homes. They're amazing. Beagle Freedom Project. And lastly, if you are enjoying the podcast, please click the subscribe button on YouTube. That's very important. And click the thumbs up. And yeah, I just got to say, you guys are awesome. Oh, and lastly, don't forget, go to liquiddeath.com and go order some of this very delicious, yummy, and environmentally friendly water. And make sure that you do the 10% promo code, enter in Talk of Love, and that will support the company, the environment, and this podcast. So thank you guys so much. You guys rock. We'll see you next Monday. We'll be back to having guests on, and we've got some cool people coming up, so you won't want to miss it. Thank you guys for everything. Mwah. Love you guys. You rock, and don't threaten me with a good time. Bye, guys.